Good evening. The Parsha is Mishpatim, and therefore, since it deals with the laws of Choshen Mishpat, it gives us Rishus to discuss any topic related to Choshen Mishpat, pretty much. We're going to discuss the famous topic of Ovid Inish, Dina Dinafshe. There is a halacha that is found in Shulchan Aruch in the Gemara Bava Kama that a person is allowed to take the law into his own hand. What is the criteria where a person is allowed to go around Beis Din, where a person can act on his own, can, in a sense, perform a type of vigilante justice and take the law into his own hands? And when is that allowed, when is not allowed? We'd like to cover the sugya, and there is certainly a lot to see. Obviously, it should be stated, but it should not need to be stated at the same time, that we live in a country where there is law, and there is Dina de Malchus Adina, and there is law of the land, and a person, before they decide to take the law into their own hands, needs to know, is it against the law of the United States of America as well, when they make such decisions. But the things we're going to touch upon tonight are all going to be legal, and there won't be any question about that. And the question is, what does the halakha have to say about that when it comes to the laws pertaining to Beis Din? So everything is a Gemara in Bava Kama. Gemara in Bava Kama, Chav Zayin, Chav Ches, 27-28, is where this sugi is found. Says the Gemara in Bava Kama. Dehohu gargagusa de beitre dechol yoma havidali chad minayu. Asa chad kadali biyoma delo dilei. So what happened was, there was two partners who owned a pit of water. And each day one of them would come and water his field from it. They would switch off. Mondays was A, Tuesdays was B. And each day they would switch off regarding who had permission to water the field. What happened? So Yoma Didi Havi, below Eshtach Bay. What happened is, one day one was using it on the partner's day. The gentleman was supposed to be there, it was not his day, and he was using the water pit on a day that's not belonging to him. And what happened? The partner protested, and the other one said, buzz off, mind your own business, I'm going to use the pit today to water my field. What happened? Shakal Panda Demara Mechaya. So the gentleman whose field it was, whose turn it was that day, so he hit the other one using the handle of the shovel. And he said, get out of the way, it's my day to use the field, to use the water to the field, move away. And he knocked the guy over with the back of the shovel. Okay? So the Gemara then says, Amar le mea pandi bepandi lemechaya. So the Gemara says that this person who's defending his right to use the well can hit him 100 times. There's no restrictions. If he needs to use the well, whatever he needs to do to make sure it's right, that he has the ability to use the well in his day, to make sure he has what to do to him, he's allowed to hit the gentleman who is infringing on his rights. Says the Gemara, Afilu l'andamar, even according to the opinion, lo avad inish dina l'navshe, who says that a person cannot act on his own, cannot take the law into his own hands, even such a person who says that you cannot take the law into your own hands. So this person will admit that in this case, it's certainly allowed to take the law into your own hand. Why? Because this case is b'makom seida, in a case where you will suffer a loss, in a case where a person will not be able to run his business properly and he will suffer a loss, you're allowed to take the law into your own hands. That is the halakha, says the Gemara. To avoid a loss, you can take the law into your own hands and do what is ever necessary, almost necessary. Based on this Gemara, the Ketos HaChoshen cites a Mishnah in Bav Metzia. It's not here on the sheet, but the Mishnah in Bav Metzia on Kuftas Vav says that you're not allowed to enter into a person's home in order to collect a debt. That is against the Torah. The person can come out of the home to pay you back the money that you lent him, but you cannot go into his home. That is considered infringing on his rights. Says the Torah in Devarim Chavdal Yud, Lo Savo El Beiso, La Avot Avoto. You cannot go into his house to collect the loan. Bachutz Ta'amod. You must stand outside. It is totally inappropriate to forcibly enter into a person's home in order to collect a loan. Therefore, says the Ksos, if you're dealing with loans, with collecting a loan, there is no concept of avad inish din l'nafshe. There is no concept of a person taking the law into his own hands. You cannot do whatever you want in order to collect a loan. We do not believe in breaking people's kneecaps or engaging in any form of mafioso in order to get your money back. That is not allowed. However, in a case where something was stolen from you, where someone has property that rightfully belongs to you, that's not a case of a loan, says the Ktsos, it is 100% permissible to do what is necessary to get the object back. We'll discuss levels of force later, how much force you're allowed to use, but you're allowed to do whatever you need to get your object back. There's a Ramah. This is a whole section is quoted in Choshev Mishpat and Siman Dalin. This is where the sugya is, and the Ramah writes there in Siman Dalin and Gimel. He quotes the Maharik. The Maharik says that Ovid Inish Dina Lanafshe only applies to actual objects you can grab onto. It has to be something that this person has something on his mind. The person took my watch, I take my watch back. I have to be able to hold on to the object itself. However, if it's a chov, something that you are owed monetarily, there is no such permissibility to take the law into your own hands. He continues and says that Ovid Inish Dina Lanafshe is only when it comes to using force. If you don't use force, and you're simply taking something that belongs to you, then everyone agrees that's allowed. Meaning, a guy comes and takes my watch, and then I slip into his car when no one's looking, and I take my watch back. I didn't have to use any force. I just took back what was mine. I didn't have to fight him. That, in such a case, to take back your object, that is perfectly fine, unquestionably. Therefore, he says, when it comes to taking a chov, as long as it's not a loan, as long as you don't use force, then you can collect your debt. So that means if it means withholding merchandise that belongs to someone until they pay me, something like that, that is perfectly permissible. I don't have to go to Beis Din to work it out in order to get the money that somebody owes me legally. Okay, there's a comment of the Mordechai. The Mordechai writes in Bava Kamen Simen Lamed that Ovid Inish Dina Lanafshe only applies when it's clear that the object is mine. How do I decide? How do I know that this is a place where I can take the law into my own hands or not? So the Mordechai says, it needs to be clear to me and everyone around me that the object belongs to me. It has to be open, shut case. If there's any doubt in anyone's mind who it belongs to, then it doesn't work. So we have now a machlokas. The Yam Shel Shlomo, the Maharshal writes in Bava Kamma and Paragimel. He says that it needs to be clear to everyone no matter what. You need to have potential witnesses that the person wronged you. Let's go back to the case of the watch. If a person came and robbed me daylight, and everyone saw that he took my watch, so then it would be permissible to go and take the watch back, break into his house, and take the object back. I don't have to wait to go to Basin. It takes days to go to Basin. Weeks, months, who knows what's going to happen. The watch could be in China by the time he's done. And therefore, if I have witnesses who know for sure, and everyone sees what happened, I can go and take the object back. However, says the Marshal, if there's any doubt, if nobody saw him take what was mine, then I have a problem. Because what's going to happen is, I'm going to go break into his house, take my watch back, and the guy's going to take me to Beis Din, and he's going to say, this guy came to my house and stole my watch. The watch is mine. And I'm going to say, no, but really, the watch was mine, and he stole it from me, and I'm just stealing it back. And what's Beis Din going to say? Where's the proof? Do you have any witnesses? The watch belonged to you. And if I don't have any witnesses, I'm going to have to go to Beis Din anyway, so then it's not going to work. That's the opinion of the Maharshal. Many poskim agree with this in theory, that it has to be an open and shut case, but they don't take it as far as the Maharshal. They say that we don't say, that we do say Avdin Lanafshe, even if you don't have a definitive proof. But they raise the following issue. What happens if after he stole it from you, I'm able to go secretly and surreptitiously and to take the object back? What if I could do such a thing? The guy robs me broad daylight, but I know and I can go and get it back when no one's going to see it. He's not even going to notice. So what's going to happen? I'm going to go back into the guy's house and take the watch that belongs to me. The next day he's going to wake up and say, oh, the watch is gone. What's he going to do? He's going to call me to base and say that I came into the house and stole the watch, but I know the watch is really mine. Since he has no proof and no one saw me going to take the watch, we have what we call in halacha amigo. Migo means that I could have had a better lie, but I'm choosing to make the less obvious statement. I could say in court, what are you talking about? Where's the proof I came and took that watch? Nobody saw me. This guy's claim is that I came and took the watch that I stole from him. But I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say something seemingly weaker. I'm not going to use my best argument. I'm going to say, no, you're right. I did go into his house and I did take his watch. Do you know why? Because the watch is mine. But since I could have had a better argument, I could have argued and said, I don't know what you're talking about. The watch is always mine. There's nothing to discuss here. Since I'm being honest and upfront and using the weaker argument, this is what we call amigo. And when a person has this type of logical argument, that I could have used the stronger argument, but instead I'm using the weaker argument, so that person has the ability to win in court. That shows his sense of honesty, that he's not using the better, stronger argument.
You said it was in broad daylight, so then how could you do me then?
So in this case, when I go back into the person's house to get my watch, no one sees me. So the person comes to Basin and says...
The first guy's... there are witnesses that sort of was stolen.
So what?
How to get back in your house.
There are no one. Everyone sees that he took it from me. So whatever, the guy's going to say, you know, it was my watch in the first place. So if I go back into the house and I didn't take it, the guy wakes up the next morning and sees, oh, the watch isn't here. It must be the guy stole his watch back. So my argument to the court is going to be, not that, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. He has no witnesses that I took the watch. My argument is going to be, yeah, I did go into his house. And I'm admitting I went into his house. But I could have given you a better argument. So say the other poskim, you're allowed to go sneak back into the guy's house and to take your object back if you have such an argument. Amigo argument. Amigo argument means that I could have used a stronger argument, but instead I'm upfront and more honest. This is the opinion of the Shach and the Sma. And this is the halacha. The Gemara Bava Kama of Zion on the base says, in the name of Ben Bagbag, he writes over here in the third source, Omer al tikanis l'chatzer chavercha litol es shelcha shelo birshus. Don't go into your friend's courtyard without permission to take what is yours. Shematira alav kaganav, because it can appear like you are a ganav, you're a robber. What are you sneaking around the person's house for? Even though you're getting what is yours. What's the better mahalach, he says the Ben Bagbag. Elishavar shinav. Punch the guy in the mouth. Vemar lo, shali ani notel. I'm taking what's mine. Don't be a cat that's sneaking around in the night and being dishonest. Confront the guy in public and say, you took what's mine, punch him in the face, and take back what's yours. Now again, we're not advocating any violence. What Ben Bagbag's argument here is, it's always better to be up front. Because if you're up front, and you take what's yours, so that's going to be better. So Tosus here says that this is lechatchila. But if you are not physically capable of starting a fight with someone, so then you can sneak in and take what's yours. Therefore, if you would do it openly, you might lose it, right? If I go into the person's house openly and everyone sees me take my object back, I might lose my migo. And therefore, says Tosos, it might be better to go do it secretly. Because if you do it secretly, you can always argue in court that I could have done it publicly, but instead I did it secretly over here. Okay, so that is the halacha. The halacha is, in order to apply Abadil Nafshe, it doesn't have to be 100% guaranteed proof all around video cameras and witnesses testifying that the object was yours. Next, let's discuss the following case. A vendor has a client who went bankrupt, and the client is not going to pay back anymore. He's bankrupt, so he's not going to pay anything that the vendor is owed from the client. So what does he want to do? He's not going to, Basin's going to take forever, and who knows what's going to happen. So what he wants to do is, the client is still a client of his, so the client ordered 100 of something, and what's he going to do? He's going to send him 95, but charge him for 100. And therefore, he's going to slowly take off the top each time until he's made back what he was owed. You understand the case? Right? We're going to take off the top each time until you make back what you are owed. So is this a permissible form of Avad Inish Din L'Nafshei? So we know already that if it's an issue of a loan, you can't go and use Avad Inish Din L'Nafshei to go and collect a loan. So that's the question here. When you leave off that 5% of the product that you're sending to the guy, are you saying that really 100% is his, but I'm taking 5%? Or are you saying, no, only 95% is his, but I'm just charging him more? See the difference? If you're simply charging him more, so then what you're doing is you're collecting a loan. You're essentially taking money back without his knowledge and his permission. But if what you're saying is, I'm holding on to the 5% because I want to make sure the guy pays me back, and you tell the guy, you know, I'm only sending you 95%, not 100%, because I want you to pay up the loan, and this is the amount you're going to pay for it, so then that's fine, because it's a mashkum. It's a collateral, and that would be permissible in such a case. A collateral is fine, but to continuously tell the guy, or the guy doesn't know that you're taking money from him, extra money he doesn't know about, that would not be permissible. But in case of collateral, that would be fine. To send him 95-80% of the product and say, I'm going to charge you this amount until you pay back.
Does the other person have to agree to it?
Ah, so says the B'tzel Chachma. The B'tzel Chachma says that if you agree to this, if you tell the guy that you're sending him 100, and you don't send him 100, so that's what we call mishapara. Mishapara means that a person makes a promise up front, he has to carry it all the way through. That's not allowed. You have to pay him, you have to promise him, you have to give him what you promise, but if you want to do it up front, so that would be permissible. Okay, next, causing damage. Can you cause a loss to someone else in the form of Avad Dina Lanashe? Can you hurt their? Can you hurt them monetarily? So says the Gemara here in Bava Kama. Hamaniach Hasakad Rishus Harabim. If you person goes and he lines the whole courtyard with a bunch of jugs, Uva Acher V'Nisakel Ba V'Shavra Pater. So the guy says, I got to get out of my house. The guy put 100 barrels of wine between my house and the street. So the halacha is, you walk through them, knock them all over. You got to get to the street. Are you supposed to stay in your house all day? Avid inish dilanafshe, it's 100% fine. Amai patri baile la nuli mezal, the guy should look where he's walking. So amr debe rav, meshme de rav, the mamal rushis rav mkula chavios, where again the person had nowhere to walk and he just had to get out and therefore he had no such choice. So we see if a person is blocking you from using something in its normal way, then you can damage the property to get what you need to do. Let's discuss the case of someone parks in front of the driveway, you need to get out, what are you supposed to do? The guy's gone, you're honking and beeping and walking around the whole block, and all of a sudden, I guess this is probably a bigger issue in Brooklyn as opposed to the five towns, but someone parks in front of the driveway and you can't get out. What are you supposed to do in such a case? So, ideally, you should ask him to move before you start keying his car and calling the police. Ask if you can find the guy, ask him to move. If that doesn't work, and you can drive around the person in a reasonable way, you can drive on your grass and it won't ruin the petunias, so then that would also be the best way to handle the issue as well. However, what else can be done if that doesn't work? So it says the Gemara here in Bava Kama, Chav Ches Amud Aleph. So, Shor She'ala Al Gabei Chavero. What happened is, one ox jumped on top of another ox, okay? And the ox on top is hurting the ox on the bottom. And it's going to kill him. So, Uba Baal Hatachton, V'shamet Es Shalo, V'nafel Elyon, Umes. So, what does the guy do? The guy, owner of the one on the bottom, comes and he, So if he pushes off, pulls out the bottom one, so he's putter. My love, b'mua delay kapseda. Lo b'tamdi kapseda hayhachi ima seifa dechafu elyon v'meis chayv. Ah, how come the halacha is if I shove off the top one who's hurting the bottom one, I'm chayv. If I pull out the bottom ox, I'm putter. If I shove off the top ox, I'm chayv. Why, says the Gemara? My chayv shahay lo l'shamtu v'lo shamtu. Because whenever you engage in avad inish dilan asher, whenever you do to take the law into your own hands, you must do the least amount of damage possible. That is the first rule. You must do the least amount of damage possible. It's better to pull your ox out than to shove the other one off and he might die. And therefore, that's the first rule, says the Gemara. You have to be careful what you do. The Sma says, if a person is going to apply Avad Inish Dilan Ashe and he uses too much force, so then he is chayev. Okay? Then he goes on to say, but in a case where a person is so concerned over his money and a person goes is worried that everything's going to be ruined, so then if you use too much force, then we're not going to hold the person responsible. The Gemara, the Rush, brings the following case. Let's say a person has a barrel that's very shaky. The barrel's very shaky, it might fall. So he sees a rock in somebody's property. You have like a nice stone in your garden. And he goes and he takes the stone to hold up the barrel. You come home and you see that your prize stone is under this guy's barrel. And what do? Take your stone back, and the barrel falls. Right? That's what happens. So, if the barrel's going to fall, you say, it's not my fault. The Rush says, incorrect. He says, what could you have done? You could have gotten a different rock. Why'd you have to, if you're going to replace your prize rock, there are rocks everywhere, go get a different rock, and stick it under the barrel, and protect the guy. Again, whatever damage can be mitigated is your responsibility. The Chazon says that if the person borrowed your rock to prop up the barrel, It's not such a great chutzpah. Okay, the guy borrowed a rock. Relax, it's not the end of the world. And therefore, his offense does not warrant you breaking his barrel of wine. Since there was no gross negligence on the side of the offender, so it's your responsibility to do as least amount of damage as possible. And you have to take a moment and think, what's the least offensive way I can save myself over here? And therefore, if there's a way to get your car out of the blocked driveway with doing the least amount of damage, you need to do that. You can't go to the atom bomb first. You can't press the atomic bomb first. You have to do the least amount of damage to get your car out of the driveway. What if you're trying to squeeze out of the driveway the best of your ability and scratch the guy's car? You did your best. You tried and you scratched the guy's car. So the SMO would say that if you're in a rush, you're not responsible for damaging the car. If you're not in a rush and you can navigate your way past the car, then the Chazanish says you need to do your best. Do your best, but if you scratch the car, you're not responsible. Okay, says the Gemara again, Bava Kama, on Chof Ches Amid Aleph. The Yovel year, so every Yisrael who's a slave goes free. We know this, right? Every year, every 50 years, so every Jewish slave goes free. So says the Gemara, Minayin Shelin Nirtzeh, Shekalu Lo Yamav, all the time is up, and the slave is going to go free. V'rabo Misrahav Bolatzeis, and the slave doesn't want to go. He's sitting in the house. He's not leaving the property. And the master says, you got to get out of the house. And he shoves the slave out of the house, and he hurts the slave. And the halacha is the master's putter if he hurts him. Talmud Lomar, lo tikachu kofer l'shuv, lo tikachu kofer l'shuv. So, therefore, the person is not going to be responsibility. Is not going to be responsible in such a case. And the master is exempt. Says the Gemara, why is the guy exempt? What's the big deal? Why can't he wait for the guy to get out of the house? Hachmai askinan ba'avda ganva. Because the slave, the former slave, is stealing your stuff. The guy is now free, and he's going to your house, taking the candlesticks and the kiddush cup and the pictures and everything. And the former master says, get out of the house! And he shoves the guy out of the house to stop stealing the stuff. So in this case, says the Gemara, you're still going to be patur. Says the Rush, that from here we see, if someone's on your property and he won't leave, so that you have the right to forcibly remove him from your property. How can a person be stronger than Basin? Basin wouldn't shove the guy off the property. So how can you be stronger than Basin? So the Nesiva says that everyone agrees that you cannot use physical force if there's no hefsid. Let's say a guy is walking on your property, he's using a shortcut, and he's walking on your grass. Does that give you permission to run out of your house and to tackle him and to break his leg? No, because walking on your grass as a shortcut is not causing you any damage. If the person is, you know, jumping in the flower bed, or he's uncomfortably in your backyard, which was locked and no one should be there, so then 100%, you're the king of the castle, you need to protect yourself, you can get the guy out of the way. The Gemara is only allowing physical force if there's an intruder on your property, says the Chavos Yair, that if a person is trespassing, but it's not something that people are makbid on, so you need to relax. You care, the guy's walking on your front lawn, it happens all the time, people walk on your front lawn, it's not a reason to take law into your own hands, and you need to relax. That would be the halakha if someone is on your property. Okay, in the above Gemara, so the Gemara continues to ask as fast as continuing and says, "Renachmar Yisra Gamar be'evet shemasal lo rabo shivcha k'nainis ad ha'idna hetera v'hashti yisura." Oh, sorry, that's the next Gemara. So before we get to that, so the Ramah learns from the Gemara we just said about the slave that if you have an employee who's suspected of stealing, you can evict him forcibly as well. We see it here because the master is allowed to kick out this slave. At that time, the Achronim explain you don't need clear proof that the employee has stolen, but you must have some sort of reliable evidence that the employee is stealing from you in order to forcibly remove him. The next Gemara says, Renach Beis Agamar, be'evet shemasal rabo shivcha knanis. No, no, no. It's not an Eved who stole. We know that an Eved Yisrael is allowed to be given a non-Jewish slave woman as well as his wife. What happened? Ata idna hetera. When he was a slave, the Jewish man was allowed to be together with his non-Jewish woman. But now that he's not a slave anymore and Yovel has come, is he allowed to be together with this non-Jewish woman? 100% not. So what did the master see? The master saw this man doing isurim, terrible averos, and he kicked the guy out of the house. And therefore, say the poskim, perhaps we see from here that you can use force in order to stop someone from doing an isur. Even further, we're taking it even further, to use force to stop someone from doing an Aveira. There are a number of limitations, though. You cannot be a zealous vigilante walking around town and pushing people over who are doing Aveiros. A number of things we need to keep in mind. The first limitation is that it's only allowed to prevent a possible Isser, but it's not allowed for punishment. Only Basin gives punishment. If you see someone who's who's eating not kosher and he finishes the hamburger, so then walk away. You can't do anything anymore. It's only to prevent the Isser, not to punish someone after the fact. Number one. Number two, there's no concept of Avid Inish when you're not going to prevent the Isser. You see someone who is smoking. It's Usser to smoke. So you go, and he's about to put the cigarette in his mouth, and you go and you slap the cigarette out of his hand. You are now a religious zealot, and now you've stopped the person from smoking. What's he going to do? Say he got another cigarette. What'd you do? It's not going to stop anything. So it's only going to work, say the poskim, if your actions are going to stop the Isser. He's not going to be able to do it for the foreseeable future. The third limitation is the Mishnah Lemelech, who says that it might, where it applies. The Mishnah Lemelech says it only applies to a Derabanan. It also applies to a Derabanan. The Nesivo says it's only heter to stop a negative commandment. But let's say the person is not performing a positive commandment. You come home from shul on Friday night, and the person says, I don't want to make Kiddush. And the guy says, you're not going to make Kiddush. That might be a Torah commandment. And you slug the guy in the face. You have to make Kiddush. No, says the Nesivos. It's only for a negative commandment. The Chassam Sofer says it might be for a negative and a positive commandment. But we need to know which mitzvos it applies to. So a number of limitations before we start forcing people to do mitzvos. What about? But hochiach to chiach samisacha doesn't mean using physical force.
I mean just rebuking.
Yeah, that's just yelling at the guy. That's not taking law into your own hands. The Ramah, the Chumash Hadeshim say that the heter of Avid Inish is only if the Baal Aveira is connected to you. And that's a very big limitation. You can't go around stopping random people from doing Aveiros. It has to be someone who's a relative to you, because we see from the Gemara, it was a master and his slave. Someone who was under his authority, so to speak. So it has to be someone who's connected to your circle, a family member, a very close friend, something like that. Therefore, the limitation is even greater. However, if you're a third party, you can't use force, right? Because the Yom Shor Shlomo says, if you can use force on anyone, so you're going to walk around town, you know, making chaos everywhere. And therefore, it only applies to those people who are connected to you directly. Next. We're going to discuss now the issue of, do you have to have proper kavana? Do you have to be very firm when you do this? I'm doing it l'shem shemayim, or can it be for any reason at all? And what about seeing people who are beating up, stopping a fight? Can you enter into two people who are stopping a fight? So the Rush says that if you see someone who's about to hit you, hit a relative, and you can't stop them verbally, you can use force to stop them. That's case number one. You see someone hitting your cousin, you can step in, if words don't work, and stop the bully from hitting your cousin, your child, whoever it may be, a brother, sister, whatever the situation may be. Then the Rush does something very strange. Right after that, the Rush says, if you see someone hitting another Jew, and the only way to save them is to use force, then you're allowed to use force. What a strange comment to the Rush. First he says the same halacha regarding your relative, and then the Rush says the same halacha regarding a third party. Why, asks the Achronim, does the Rush need to divide this idea of breaking up a fight or a bully into a relative and then someone who's a third party? So there's a number of answers which come out with a number of different halachos. I think we have four different approaches here on the sheet. So the first approach is brought by the Sma. The Sma writes in Tafchof Aleph of Ches that the heter of intervening force is only if it is l'shem shemayim. You have to be, you're doing it for the right reasons. If your physical intervention is because you already hate the bully, the guy who's bullying the other person is someone you hate, and the reason why you want to slug him is because you hate him from the first at the beginning, so says the Sma, it's not okay. But it is okay if you hate the bully already and he's bullying a relative. It doesn't have to be l'shem shemayim, says the Sma, if a relative of yours is being affected. But if it's a third party, then it has to be l'shem shemayim. The Taz argues and says that there's no role of kavana at all in this halacha, and it's a mitzvah to save someone, you act no matter what. Relative, not relative, it doesn't matter what your kavanas are, you step in and save someone who's being hurt. Says the Taz, what's the Rush's issue? The two cases are as follows. If you're involving in a third party, then you're going to be chayav if you use more force than necessary. If you could stop the bully by simply tackling him, but instead you go all out and you hurt him even more, so then if it's a third party, that's a problem. But if it's a relative, since you're so emotionally connected, if you use more than the appropriate force in stopping the bully, so then you're not going to be chayav. That's what the Taz says. Now, this machlokas, whether you need to have kavana l'shem shemayim in order to hurt someone, but in order to help somebody else, has a nafkamin in one area of halacha. What other area of halacha do we find where you could do something bad in order to help somebody else out? Halachas of lashon hara, right? We know there's a halacha of toeles when it comes to lashon hara. You can speak lashon hara negatively about someone if it's for a positive purpose. So writes the Chafetz Chaim in Hilchos Lashon Hara and Klal Tes. He quotes this machlokas in the Taz and the Sma, and he says this will be a factor as well when it comes to speaking lashon hara l'toeles. He cites Rabbeinu Yonah and Shari Tshuva, who says that if you want to speak lashon hara about someone who's harming other people, but you already have a grudge with that person beforehand, are you allowed to speak lashon hara? So according to the Sma, no. But according to the Taz, yes. And the Chafetz Chaim leaves it a little bit as a suffix. He's unclear whether how much kavan has to be l'shem shemayim, and the poskim are very conflicted. Very, very conflicted about, I see someone, he's going to go into business with a friend of mine, and this person is going to business, the person who's going to go into the business with my friend, I don't like him beforehand, but I want to warn my friend from not going into business with him. So says the Chafetz Chaim, if you already hated this guy beforehand, you have to be very careful if you're the right person to speak Lashon Hara, even though it will be beneficial to somebody else, because you're going to hurt someone to help somebody else. Does it have to be L'shem Shemayim or not? Says the Ulam HaMishpat, the third Mahalach here. He says that if you see an aggressor who's threatening someone else's life, the Halacha is allowed to kill the Rodef, this aggressor, if you know that he's a violent person. However, if you see Joe from down the block, who's the most mild-mannered guy, and he starts threatening a person's life, so says the Ramah, and says the Ilma Mishpat, you need to be very careful about how you go and respond to that person, because he's generally a mild-mannered person. And you have to be very careful if this person has the status of a rodef, someone who's going to kill someone. Generally, the guy's very relaxed. Now he starts making physical threats, and he says, I'm going to kill this person. So you need to be very careful about how you respond. So says Vilma Mishpat, if it's a relative, you're very connected to the person, obviously. This person is a potential rodef, even if he's not in the mafia. He's just a mild-mannered person, but now he's out of control. You can kill him as a rodef. But if the person who's being attacked is just a third party, you have to be careful. And he says you cannot go and kill the normally mild-mannered person who's now threatening to kill someone. Mahalach number 4 is Neyam Shel Shlomo. He discusses a person who sees an aggressor, and he hits the aggressor as a form of an inish, right? He goes and hits the person. Now, it turns out that the supposed bully was not really a bully, and he was an undercover police officer, and he was stopping a robbery, right? The supposed aggressor was not really an aggressor, not doing anything wrong. Now, since you made a mistake, if it happened to a third party, who the supposed aggressor was hurting, but he wasn't really an aggressor, he was an undercover cop, so then you're going to be responsible. If the incorrect aggressor was hurting a relative of yours, and you hurt the incorrect aggressor, so then, says the Anshul Shlomo, you're not going to be held responsible, because again, you love that relative. So four approaches here in understanding the Rush. But what do we see, bottom line? Before a person involves themselves in a machlokas, and this is good mussar for all times, you need to judge the situation carefully. Before you start to get involved in machlokas, whether it be physical or not physical, you need to analyze the situation well and to understand what is going on in the case in front of you. Let's say you are not physically capable of breaking up a fight, but you know Big Gadali Goober, and he has the physical capability of breaking up a fight. If it's not your issue, can you go and hire a hired hand to break up that fight for you and to get involved? So the Birkas Avram quotes the Briska Rav. The Briska Rav says you can send a shliach to go around, to act as basin. On the other hand, the Orach Mishpat says that no, only you have the permission to stop. You can't go get somebody else. And you're not allowed to use a shliach. Let's get now to the last case. The last case is the issue of disputing charges. You have bought a product, right? You bought a product from the store, a Jewish store, and you bought a hot water pot, an urn. And you bring home the urn, and it's totally defective. It's nothing's right about it. It's you bought the urn, and it has it's a British plug for an American outlet, and it said on the box it was 5 quarts. It's only 2 quarts. The whole thing is ridiculous. You were totally had, and you paid way too much money, and you want the money back. So you bring the defective urn back to the store, and the store says, sorry, no return policies, final sale, tough luck, have a good day. And that you were wronged. That was terrible. You got really had by the store, and you were wronged. Can you now call the credit card company and have them dispute the charge? Because essentially what you're doing is, you're not going to Beis Din. You are involving a non-Jew to settle the score for you. Is this a proper form of Ovid Inish Dina Lanasha? That's the question discussed by the poskim. So we need to know a few more things. Similarly, just as a side, can you call a tow truck to come and move the car that's blocking your driveway? Because again, you're using a guy to come and settle a dispute between you and somebody else instead of going to Beis Din. So what do we say about such a case? So the Ramah writes that it's usher to use a guy to protect your rights, but if you do use a guy to protect your rights, so then we don't make you return the object. We're not going to fine you, but it is usher to do such a thing. So there seems to be a stira, because in Simen Shin Pei Ches, which is the halachos of Mesira, of reporting on Jews to the non-Jewish authorities, so the halach is you can't use a guy to punish a Jew. The Rambam Hilchos Chovel Parakhes cites the Gemara of Avakam Kuf Yud Zayin, who says that if two litigants are involved in a case regarding property or an object, each one claiming it belongs to him, if one of them takes the property in question and hands it over to a guy, so that person who settles this case and puts in the property of a guy is put in cheirim until he takes the object back and the dispute is settled in Beis Din. Because that is a form of mesira, of essentially tattling on a Jew in front of the non-Jews. This is cited by the Shulchan Aruch and Shin Pei Ches, Sif Hei. So, what do we do over here? What do we say in this, such a case? So the Shach says that this is a case of mesira. You're asking a non-Jew to settle the score, totally unacceptable, and it's usher. The Maharam Lublin argues, and he says that mesira is when you want to punish someone by getting the government involved. Okay, your neighbor is making way too much noise in his construction, and it's really keeping you up at night, and it's really annoying, and his house is too big, it's too this, too that. So you call the local government, and you tattle on the guy, and you say, you know, he's putting in a third toilet, and he doesn't have a variance, and, you know, you send the people on him. I'm not saying necessarily nowadays that that question is up for discussion, but that would be a case of where I'm trying to punish someone to use a non-Jewish courts. That's a punishment. I don't care if he has a third toilet or not. It doesn't make a difference to me. But I'm punishing him using the guard. What we want to discuss over here is not punishing someone. I want to get what belongs to me rightfully. This person has my property. This person is blocking my driveway. This person has my money and sold me a defective urn, a defective teapot. I want my money back. I'm not doing it to punish him. I'm doing it because I want my property. And therefore, the Maharam Lublin sees a leniency over here. So why is Shin Pei Ches, the case of handing over the property, different than the Ramah over here? So the Tshuvas HaRamah writes in Simen Pei Vav that if a person is in a fight and he uses a guy to win the fight, that's usur. Again, to punish. But if there's no other way to protect your rights than to use the non-Jewish court system or a non-Jew, then that is permissible and it's not mesira. It's usur, says the Ramah, but it's not mesira. Because I'm not using it to punish, I'm using it to get what's rightfully mine. The Urim and Simen Dalet argues vehemently with the Ramah. He says that there's a heter arkos. What's arkos? Arkos is going to a non-Jewish court. You're allowed to go to a non-Jewish court when? If you can't get a fair deal in the Jewish court, because the guy's not going to come to court, to the Beis Din. You have to go to the non-Jewish court instead. So if a person physically cannot get what's rightfully his, the money, whatever it may be, his driveway, and there's no other way to get it, you can use a non-Jewish system to get it. I'm not doing it to punish him. I'm doing it to get what's mine. Rav Moshe writes this as well, that there's no other alternative. You can use a guy. And therefore, it goes without question. It would seemingly be that one is allowed to have the guy tow the car. One is allowed to dispute the charge because I'm not doing it to punish. I'm doing it to get what's mine. Rav Asher Weiss said that specifically, even nowadays, these laws of Messiah are hard to apply because we live in a fair society. We live in a system where, you know, the tow truck is acting honestly. And the credit card company is acting honestly. American Express is doing in the best interest of the customer. And therefore, they're not going to be unfair when they cancel the charge. And therefore, it's questionable to say that Mesira applies nowadays in such a case. But Rav Asher Weiss did say that it might be proper, the Fnim Mesiras Hadin, for the person who calls the tow truck to have the car taken away to pay the cost of getting the car back. Not that you would have to, that would not be the halacha, mikra that you wouldn't have to, but it would be proper to pay for the cost of getting the car back, because what you care about is getting out of the driveway. So it costs you money to get out of the driveway, so you might be the better thing to pay, if possible, but that would not be the mikra din. So what we have covered is the laws of avodah zarah, dilma nafshei, taking the law into your own hands. It is expansive, but at the same time, it is also limited in where we can apply it, and we have to be very judicious in where we take the law into our own hands, and it's always better to settle things in the most calm and respectful way between person to person or in a basin.